With over 400 stores nationwide, Burke's Outlet is growing faster than ever. Now shop our newest store in Midlothian at the grand opening celebration October 12th through 15th. Discover more brand name fashion for the whole family, plus home decor up to 70% off department store prices. The first 150 customers each day October 12th through 15th get a mystery scratch-off card for a shopping spree up to $250 at the new Burke's Outlet in the Midlothian Town Crossing. Doors open at 9 a.m., 10 a.m. Sundays.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Backline Report. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alveda. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I'm fantastic, Carlos, but, I'm really having a tough time really devoting all my attention to golf because my Indians are in the playoffs. They're battling the hated Yankees. The Tribe jumped out to that 2-0 lead by winning both games in Cleveland last week, but the Yanks took both games in New York, and now the five-game series moves back to Cleveland for the finale tomorrow night. It's a tense time right now, Carlos. I just can't concentrate. But nevertheless, we're going to talk about all the golf action from around the world and the top stories that we're going to discuss tonight. There's a guy, the red shirt guy, Tiger Woods. He's back full swings again. Yes. Healthy, great. One, but two repeat winners in professional golf this week. Two. And Christy Kerr curses cancer and wins in France. So even though there's the baseball playoffs with a little football thrown in for good measure, there was a ton of golf last week. So, Carlos, let's talk about it. Let's go.
Yeah, I just warn you, your Indians better beat those darn Yankees. I mean,
I hate the Yankees.
They have to beat them. I always say in baseball, I have two teams. I mean, in every sport, I have two teams. But I have my favorite team in baseball is the Atlanta Braves and any other team that goes against the New York Yankees. So those are my two teams. Right now, that's how I play it. And, of course, on baseball, I'm following, of course, the Puerto Rican players like Francisco Lindor and the Indians. And Carlos Romero and Carlos Beltran in Houston. Yeah. So, that's where we're going. But, hey, like you said, we have a little thing to talk about, and that is a big thing to us, golf. And we start with the week in Backspin, where every week we go and talk about the whole action on the weekend. And there was the first tournament. This is so difficult to just get it out of my mouth. This is the new... This is a new season. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
New season on the PGA Tour. It just finished last week. But anyway, it's the new season for the PGA Tour, and it was the Safeway Open. And what happened there?
Yeah, we talked about it, Carlos. The off season was Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. That was it. 3 days. Boom. We're right back at it. Brandon Steele repeated in Napa Valley in the Safeway Open. Plus... if you look back 3 years, he held a 54-hole lead before fading on Sunday in 2015. So I think he kind of likes Silverado Country Club. He makes a lot of money there. Even though he posted a couple of bogeys on 12 and 14 on the back nine on Sunday this year, he was able to throw in birdies at number 16 and 18 to hold off Tony Finau, some guy called Phil Mickelson, and Justin Hadley. Hadley, who had a very successful year on the Web.com Tour to regain his PGA Tour status this year, fired the low round on Friday with an 11 under par 61 that included 10 birdies, an eagle, and a lone bogey. Johnny Miller's going to have to toughen up that golf course a little bit. That's way too easy. Phil made quite a splash at Silverado and mingled with the fans on nearly every hole as he only hit 15 of 56 fairways all week, so he was outside the ropes quite a bit. He even made a remark for the fans to enjoy a rare drive that found a fairway on Sunday that elicited a round of laughter from the gallery. Phil is always entertaining. He even confounded Johnny Miller and the NBC announcing crew with a flopper when a normal chip and run would have done nicely, but, you know, that's Phil just being Phil. Graham Gillette finished T5 with Tyler Duncan, the 54-hole leader, who posted a 75 on Sunday. Evidently, holding the lead did not set well with the rookie. Others with notable finish at the Safeway Open, Bud Cauley, T7. Hunter Mahan and Zach Johnson. Yes, Hunter Mahan's back on tour, T13. Bryson DeChambeau, T17. Notables missing the cut this week, Keegan Bradley, Harris English, and Peter Uihlein. After posting an 82 in the first round and a 41 on the front nine on Friday, Jason Gore had to withdraw. I don't know if he's got some health problems or what's going on there. You know, Jason went through this before and had to fight his way back. So hopefully everything will work out for him. For Steele, it was his third career win and is now the leader. Catch this, Carlos. He's now the leader in the 2018 FedEx Cup race. I knew you wanted to know that.
We started already. Wake me up in January for the Tournament of Champions. We'll talk about
it. I might go a little bit. I might sleep a little longer till the end of March, right before the Masters. I'm like Tiger. I'm all about the majors now. I don't, you know, these are weekly stuff. I don't care about. I'm just the majors and the Ryder Cup.
Majors,
that's it.
WGCs, yeah. and the players. That's
the players.
That's
yeah, that's it.
Okay, I'm with you.
We're going to cut the show down to about 12 a year. That's it.
Yeah, it's just 12 shows. Hey, but we can talk about the ladies, you know, the LPGA Tour. They have a great product. But anyway, let's talk a little bit about the Europe. Huh? I'm sorry?
We love to talk about the ladies, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Hey, the European Tour, Tyrrell Hatton fired a closing 66 to finish four rounds in the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship on 24 under par. I mean, you talked about the 11 under from on the PGA Tour, but Tyrrell Hatton, in the European Tour, the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship had a lot of low scoring, and I'm telling you about the records as well. And as I said, it was 24 under par, three clear of his fellow Englishman, Ross Fisher, who closed with a stunning course record, 61 over the old course at St. Andrews. 61 at St. Andrews. Yes, and he birdied the 17th.
That's blasphemy. Blasphemy.
Yeah, that's unheard of. Hatton began the final round with a five-shot lead after rounds of 68, 65, and 65 over St. Andrews, Carnoustie, and Kingsbourne. It looked like his advantage over the field was set to reduce early on as he spun his second shot on the first back into the Swilken Burn, but Hatton took a drop and then held his pitch for a par four. The defending champion then went on a run, making four birdies in a row to extend his lead to seven. Fisher also birdied four straight holes from the second, and then he added further gains on the eighth and ninth holes to turn into, oh my God, a 29. He turned the corner into a 29. He then birdied the 12th, 13th, 14th, and 17th as it looked as the first European Tour 59 could be on. He needed an eagle on the final hole for that 59, and he had a chance from the Valley of Sin, but missed and also missed a birdie putt. Still, he caught at a 61, the best professional score ever recorded over the old course. His 61 was second course record over on open course during the tournament. Tommy Fleetwood carded a 63 at Carnoustie on Friday. This was the second year in a row that Ross Fisher has finished second in this tournament, and he was pleased with that showing. Hatton did well to keep the pressure on with a birdie at the 14th, and he's barred his way in to claim his second straight Alfred Dunhill Links title. So he also, that was the second person that Fred was referring to that won and repeated. Frenchman Victor Dubuisson played an excellent final round of 63 to end the week in third place with Gregory Birdie, Robert Rock, and Mark Warren tied for fourth. Tyrrell Hatton is the first man to successfully defend the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship title. He's only the second man to win the event twice after Paddy Harrington, the only other one. He's only the fourth player on the European Tour to defend the title for his first two wins. Curtis Strange, Trevor Immelman, and Sanjay Jain are the other three. Jamie Donaldson and Kieran McManus won the Pro-Am element of the tournament. They closed with an amazing 56 to finish on 40 under par, three clear of Robert Rock and Brian McFadden, Victor Duisson and Chanton Narayan, and Yikin Chang and Irwi Bossa. So, I mean, after what Tyrrell Hatton did, not to be among those in the Pro-Am, you can know how the amateur did. Other notable finishes. Luke Donald and Alexander Levy finished in a T7 with last week's winner, Paul Dunne, who had another good finish. Matthew Fitzpatrick and Graham McDowell were among 10 who tied for 15 in his comeback to action after a short stint out. Race to Dubai leader Tommy Fleetwood finished in a T25. Brandon Grace, T47. And Rory McIlroy went winless this year. He finished T63. While Fred, Lee Westwood, Jordan Smith, Thorbjørn Olsen, and Paddy Harrington were among the notables that missed the cut.
Yeah, there was just no wind. It was beautiful weather. It was warm, and they were just shooting lights out over there. I watched some of them on Sunday morning. It was really beautiful. Man, they were just throwing in birdies from everywhere. You know, they were hitting the ball so long and, you know, right up by the edges of the greens on the par fours, some of those short ones, and they were just basically putting them, you know, off the fringes and off the tight long fairways. So when there's no wind, the old course is just basically defenseless. Even those big greens, they have 60, 70, 80-foot putts, but still, you know, there's just not much there to keep not from making birdies and eagles and all that stuff, well, as good as these guys are. Carlos, with no LPGA tournament this week, the ladies are traveling, getting ready for the Asian tour next week. Christy Kerr and a few others were over in France for the Lacoste Ladies Open de France. Christy Kerr broke down in tears and used a choice curse word when being interviewed after her winning round on Sunday at the Lacoste Ladies Open de France. She had dedicated the week to playing for the defeat of cancer. She had lost two very good friends lately to the devastating disease, and her concentration to play for a higher cause finally came to a head while talking on the camera. Kerr had a huge 9-stroke lead heading into the final round. An 8-under-62 on Thursday gave her a 3-stroke lead after the first round. She kept her foot firmly on the gas pedal, carding another 6 birdies in a flawless 64 in the second round, continued with a third round 68, then ground out 70 pars and a single birdie for a 69 on Sunday. Kerr will turn 40 on Thursday, but can still show the kids a thing or two on the golf course. In the final round, China's Zhiyu Lin made bogeys on the second and third holes, but then sprinted into second position with birdies for a round of 64 and a total of 13 under par. Two-time tournament winner Azahara Munoz, who won the title in 2013 and 2014, had earlier posted a 69, ended in third position. Ann Van Dam made 4 birdies in her first 7 holes to get within 5 of the lead, but then dropped back. She ended up with fourth position, and our good friend Holly Clybourne had her best finish of the year, T4 also there tied with Van Dam. Also in the top 10 were Agatha Sauzon, Whitney Hillier, and Baylen Mosel, who tied for 6th place, while the 2016 champion Beth Allen, another friend of the show, tied for 9th place with the 2015 winner Celine Herbin. Yeah, some other ones. So, for Kerr, this was her first win on the Ladies European Tour, but it was her 27th worldwide win. I think she has 19 wins on the LPGA Tour of that 27. So, good win for Christy Kerr. Very emotional week for her, and she broke down during the interview, Carlos.
definitely. I mean, for those who don't know, Christy Kerr was very emotional just because, like you said, there were two people that had passed away. One of them is Peggy Pamela Hill Kuhn, who is the matriarch for the Kuhn Golf family. She's the mom for two-time U.S. Women's Amateur and U.S. Girls Junior Champ, former Kelly Kuhn. She died last Tuesday here in suburban Dallas. And Christy and Kelly are very close friends. And also she counted Pam, how she called her mom, Kelly's mom, as a close friend. And Christy Kerr founded Birdies for Breast Cancer more than a decade ago, and she has raised almost $4 million for that cause. And those efforts spearheaded funding of the Jersey City Medical Center's Christy Kerr Women's Health Center. Christy's mother, Linda, is a breast cancer survivor, so you can imagine how all of this had been playing in her mind. She said that she was in a mission, and she got it done for them, so definitely that's when she broke down into tears afterwards. It's a very close-to-home cause for her, so it was a great showing, and very happy that she did one on there in the Ladies European Tour, and hopefully, you know, she did say that F word, but I think it just came from her heart, and you can just, when it happens that way, you can excuse those things from happening. So anyway, talking more about ladies, let's talk about the Symetra Tour, where Rachel Rohana shot a 4-under par 68 on Monday to win the Symetra Tour Championship at the LPGA International Jones Course in Daytona Beach, Florida. Reigning Florida forced tournament officials to trim the event from 72 holes to 54, and after shooting 69 and 65 over the first two rounds, Rohana had a 4-stroke lead after Saturday's play was suspended. She had to wait until Monday to tee off for the final round after play was postponed because of rain Sunday. So Rohana played the first 11 holes of the final round at 4-under, but a bogey on the par 3 17th opened the door for Emma Talley, who closed with a 67 to secure her LPGA Tour card. Talley, who is the 2013 U.S. Women's Amateur Champion and 2015 NCAA Individual Champion, shot 67, but she also bogeyed number 17. So Rohana finished the weather-delayed event at 13-under, holding off charges by Ju Liu, Emma Talley, and Benyapa Nifat-Sofon, who finished tied for second, one shot behind at 12-under. Rohana's second career Symetra Tour victory, which earned her $30,000, wasn't enough to boost her inside the top 10 on the Volvic race for the card, but she still finished number 11 on the money list just by $2,509. That's how much, how less short of an amount of money she missed being automatically into the LPGA next year. But, you know, her game has been trending upwards this season as she's had top 20 finishes in 6 of her last 7 starts. It was her third top 5 finish of the year, so she can be very positive that she was at least assured of returning to the LPGA International course for the final stage of Q School the week after Thanksgiving. On the other hand, like I mentioned before, Emma Talley, she entered the season-ending tournament on the bubble at number 10 on the Volvic race for the card. So with that 567, she finished in a T2 and locked down her LPGA card for next year. The top 10 finishers in the race for the card earned LPGA cards for 2018, and in order, they are Benyapa Nifat-Sofon, Hannah Green, Celine Boutier, Nana Quartz-Matson, Ju Liu, Erin Lee, Lindsay Weaver, and Catherine Tange, Emma Talley, and Caitlin Dumba, Fred.
Yeah, that. I'm glad you had all those names, Carlos. Thank you for taking those.
That's why I switched. You know, I said, well, let me leave him with the Ladies European Tour this time. I'll take the Symetra, so make it easier for you. That's all.
I think that's it for the recaps, eh?
That's it, yes. Any final words before we go on to our four call?
I do not.
All right, so let's move on now to our four call or the quick previews for this weekend's action. And there is, yeah, there's action on the PGA Tour. Yeah, during the new season. Yeah, I forgot. So they have
a
tournament. Yeah, so, and I believe that Justin Thomas, the recently voted PGA Tour Player of the Year, is going to be playing, right?
Yeah, he's the defending champion. He has won this thing a couple of times, I think. You know, and who says the PGA Tour doesn't play outside the United States enough? They begin the Asian Swing this week. They're just starting a new year, and they're already out there in Malaysia. The guys will spend the rest of October playing first in the CIMB Classic in Malaysia this week, then on to Korea for the PGA Cup at Nine Bridges, a new event. Then to China for the WGC HSBC Championship before returning to the States for the Shriners Hospitals for Children Open in Las Vegas, clear at the beginning of November. This is the fifth year the CIMB Classic has been a co-sanctioned event with the Asian Tour. Ryan Moore went back-to-back in 2013 and 2014. And then, as you mentioned, FedEx Cup winner and player of the year, Justin Thomas, got his last 2 years started fast with wins here in 2015 and 2016. So we had a couple repeat winners this week, and we're looking at repeat winners coming up this week for the CIMB. See if you can make it a threesome here. 78 players are vying for a piece of the $7 million purse. Top names in the field, Hideki Matsuyama, who was runner-up here last year, Paul Casey, Emiliano Grillo, Siwoo Kim, Lee Hwa-tong, Davis Love III, Tour Championship winner Xander Schauffele, Pat Perez, and Johnny Vegas, plus Anirban Lahiri. Because of the time difference, you can see it on Golf Channel Wednesday and Thursday, 10:30 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. Friday and Saturday, it's 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. But all four rounds will be rebroadcast 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Thursday, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, and 6 to 10 p.m. for the final round on Sunday if you want to catch the replay. Carlos, the PGA Tour is in Malaysia, headed out to the Great East, the Pacific Rim, for the next few weeks.
Yeah, and there's going to be a $7 million purse. And like you said, Justin Thomas, right now he's number four in the world, and Hideki Matsuyama number three. And so that gives the CIMB Classic two players for the top ten, I mean from the top five in the world rankings for the first time since it started. And, of course, watch out for PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, Xander Schauffele. He's making his first start since winning the Tour Championship. So that's somebody to look at. Hey, let's talk about the LPGA, where the LPGA Keg Hannah Bank Championship is going to be played at the Sky 72 golf course, the ocean course on it, on Incheon, South Korea. There's going to be a purse of $2 million. The winner's share is going to be $300,000, and the defending champion will be Carlota Siganda. You might remember last tournament, Brooke Henderson won the New Zealand's Women's Open. Right now, the LPGA money leader is Sungyeom Park, who really, this one will be Rookie of the Year, that's for sure. That's not going to be like John Ram, so no doubt on this one. The start of the Asia Swing is featuring one of the stronger fields of the year, with all the top 10 players from the world ranking and 18 out of the top 20 in the field. South Korea has 27 active players on the LPGA Tour, the most of any country outside the United States. Thailand is next with 13 active players. Soyeon Ryu leads by only 3 points over Lexi Thompson for LPGA Player of the Year. Park has, and as an LPGA rookie, leads the money list by $123,000 over Soyeon Ryu. Sayri Pak won the inaugural tournament in 2002, and since then, only Susanne Pedersen and Nayeon Choi have won it twice. Michelle Wee will be returning to the LPGA after missing the last four events following an emergency appendectomy. Wee plans to play the final six events of the year. Wow, I mean, she must really be feeling well to do that. The tour will be remaining in Asia for the next month, with stops in Taiwan, Malaysia, Japan, and China. next week, the Swinging Skirts LPGA Taiwan Championship will be played. And, Fred, if you want to catch it on TV, it's going to be tape delayed Thursday, noon to 4 p.m. on Golf Channel. Friday, it's going to be noon to 2:30 p.m. on Golf Channel. Saturday and Sunday, it's going to be from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. also on Golf Channel.
The Senior Tour, the Champions Tour, gets back in action this week after taking a little time off. They're at the SAS Championship. In the final week, players can qualify for the upcoming Charles Schwab Cup playoffs, which will begin next week at the Dominion Energy Charity Classic in Richmond, Virginia. Only the top 72 will be eligible for the Charles Schwab Cup playoffs. So in addition to watching who's going to win this week, just like the FedEx Cup playoffs at the Wyndham Championship every year, it's important to guys that they finish inside that top 72 to get into the playoffs the following week. So right now, Bart Bryant sits in the hot seat at number 72. Jose Maria Lazabal, Mark O'Meara, Ian Woosnam, and Gary Hallberg are just outside looking in. So you're going to have some guys looking to move up, and you know you're going to have some guys trying to hold their position so they make the playoff. The SAS Championship at Prestonwood Golf Club in Cary, North Carolina, will host 78 players for 54 holes of stroke play. No cut with a total of $2.1 million in the purse. The winner gets $315,000 of that. Doug Garwood is the defending champion, but guess who was runner-up last year? Bernhard Langer. So you know what that means. He'll probably win this year. You can watch all the action on Golf Channel live all 3 days from 2:30 to 5 p.m., Carlos.
On Golf Channel, and I'm going to tell you, you reminded me so much there of Jim Mora when you said six times playoffs during that. I counted them. Playoffs. You know, you talked about Bernhard Langer, and to say that he has been dominant, it might be an understatement. I mean, I'm going to give you one stat. And you might say, well, it doesn't sound that much. But when you lead the tour in scoring average by more than half a stroke, I mean, that, my friend, start calculating.
That's a lot.
How big that is. That is huge.
That's,
he leads by
lot.
More than half a stroke over Kevin Sutherland. So there you have it. I mean,
a half a stroke,
left.
Carlos, that's two shots in a 72-hole event. That's two
mm-hmm.
shots.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah,
I don't know. Tiger was never like that. It was never like that.
I can't call a player that way. But anyway, the last tournament that we're going to talk to you about is in the European Tour, and it's the Italian Open that is going to be played at the Golf Club Milano in Parco Reale di Monza in Italy. That's a 7,156 yards long course. It's played at a par 71, and there will be a purse of $7 million. The defending champion is hometown boy Francesco Molinari. The field features seven of the top 10 from the Race to Dubai, including the top three, Fleetwood, Masters champions Sergio Garcia and John Rahm. Rafa Cabrera-Bello, who is at number four, is playing the PGA Tour event in Malaysia. Also missing from the field is Rory McIlroy, who ends the year without a victory for only the second time in his career. After all these years, you wouldn't think that Sergio Garcia would be making his professional debut in Italy. Well, let me tell you, he is. He has never played there as a pro, so this is the first time. And this will be also the ninth time that the Italian Open has been held at the Golf Club Milano. The tournament has been part of the European Tour schedule since 1972, and Francesco Molinari will be defending the crown and two-time winner. He's among the three Italians to win their national open. The others were Massimo Manelli in 1980 and Baldovino Dasu in 1976. Ian Poulter is going to be playing there. He won the Italian Open as a rookie on the European Tour in 2000. So that is going to be a very interesting tournament to watch. Next week will be the last one, which will be the Andalucía Valderrama Masters, hosted by the Sergio Garcia Foundation in Spain. If you want to watch this on TV, you can watch it Thursday and Friday from 4 a.m. to 12 noon on Golf Channel, or Saturday and Sunday from 6:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. also on Golf Channel. And with that, we'll wrap up our four call. Fred, any final words before we go to the Par 5 News?
Yeah, just let's go back to Bernhard here a second. we were talking earlier there, and he won the Charles Schwab Cup in 2010. 2011, he hurt his thumb pushing a button. He was riding his bike, pushed his button on a stoplight to cross the street down in Miami where he lives, and he pulled some tendons in his thumb, and so he couldn't hardly play in 2011, and it kind of affected him still in 2012. But he's won the FedEx, he won the Charles Schwab Cup in 2014, 2015, 2016, and he's now like 60 years old, and he's still just beating the devil out of these guys. I mean, at least a half a shot scoring average over the year, that's gigantic. And if he doesn't win every week, I mean, he's in like the top five. He's just been totally dominant. He's dominated the Champions Tour unlike any domination we've seen in any other sport or any other golf tour that I can even think of. I mean, Tiger was dominant, but not like this. You know, he wins a couple majors every year along with everything else that he does. It's just the guy looks like he's 60, but he looks like he's about 45. He's in tremendous shape, tremendous, you know. I don't know how long he can keep this up, but I'll tell you what, it's kind of fun to watch him because, you know, Carlos, I like consistent golfers. It's great to see these guys bomb it out there at 350 yards. That's wonderful. But, you know, guys like Jordan Spieth, guys like Zach Johnson, guys that are consistent week in and week out, that is so hard to do. And Langer is just the model of consistency. He's just, his excellence is just beyond believability, really. So I just wanted to get that in there before we left it. He truly amazes me.
Yeah, I like you said, we were talking about him before, and definitely we cannot recall anybody in the history of golf to be as dominant in his division, let's say that way, because of course there's the senior tour, the seniors, which is the Champions Tour, there's juniors, there's the professionals, even ladies, because we talked about Lydia Ko, you talked about Gianni Tsang, we have talked about Tiger Woods, nobody, Jack Arnold, nobody has been as dominant as Bernhard Langer, and it's really amazing to see how he keeps doing it, even at 60 years old. And we don't know when that's going to stop. He doesn't look like he's slowing down at all. It looks like he's getting even better. So it's really not good news for anybody there on the Champions Tour. Hey, with that, we'll wrap up
Carlos,
our fourth. Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to mention that before you go to the Par 5 News, the Ohio Golf Journal, the new issue is coming out sometime tomorrow. Features the renovation work being done at the Inverness Club ahead of the 2019 U.S. Junior Am and the 2021 Solheim Cup. The Ohio Golf Journal also has news and information on golf, travel, equipment, reviews, rules, and feature articles. It's going to hit the emails tomorrow. Once again, loaded with great information, visit OhioGolfJournal.com. to read the articles and sign up to receive it every month, absolutely free, Carlos.
And now we will wrap up our four call and now move to the Par 5 News, where Fred, you're going to talk about somebody who's apparently going to start playing golf or something like that. Is this somebody we know about?
Yeah, this new guy. This is going to be a new guy. Looks like he's going to start playing again. You know, you wonder. You know, Tiger showed a video on Twitter of him taking some swings, and they were just soft, easy swings, but they were full swings. And so you just wonder, you know, he's 41, going to be 42. Is he going to lose his swing speed? Is he going to lose, you know, his power that he had? You know, he hasn't played much for really about 3 years. You know, can he really get back to any level of golf? But he is continuing to improve. And as I say, if you can go to Twitter, go to his Twitter feed, you can see the video of him taking some full swings. So I don't know. We'll see. But Tiger's out there hitting some balls, so good for him. And his Hero World Challenge that's held in the Bahamas in December will host an elite field once again. Golfers that have committed thus far include Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka, plus defending champion Hideki Matsuyama. Hideki, by the way, beat Henrik Stenson by 2 shots last year, and Matt Kuchar, Rick Fowler, and Dustin Johnson by 5. Last year at this time, Matsuyama was the hottest player in the world and continued to be one of the steadiest performers on tour for most of the year, as well as being Carlos's favorite player. He won 4 events with 7 top 10 finishes. Other tournament winners from last season in the field for the World for Tiger's event, the Hero World Challenge, is our Ricky Fowler, Matt Kuchar, Kevin Kisner, and Mark Leishman. The field accounts for 22 total PGA Tour victories last season. Also, they have Alex Noren, Race to Dubai leader Tommy Fleetwood, Francesco Molinari, Charlie Hoffman, and Kevin Kisner. They're going to play on their first Hero World Challenge. So Hoffman and Kisner, they're becoming quite a duo since their heroics at the President's Cup there. So, you know, I didn't really know this, but everybody talks about Charlie Hoffman being one of the hardest workers on tour. So finally, you know, some of his hard work is beginning to show off and get some results for him. So good for him. But Tiger's taking some swings, and the Hero World Challenge is going to have a great field at the beginning of December again, Carlos.
It's incredible. He posts something and the whole social media goes berserk. It's just a slow motion.
Still.
Yeah, it's incredible. Oh, I'm sorry?
No, I'm just saying it's still, you know, he's been away. He's been away forever. And still, when he posts something, it goes viral.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, I saw that and I started to see all the replies, the shares and everything. Hey, he just did a slow motion swing. I bet he put it in slow motion so that they don't say, oh, he's losing it. No, he put it in. I think he's teasing everybody. Let me just say it because you said, would he lose any speed or any of that? Let me just put it in slow motion so they don't start talking about that. So,
yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. But hey, even Dustin Johnson said that golf will benefit from having him back. So, I think golf will benefit from having him back, but playing well. And that's the only thing that I could say on that. Hey, after 15 years and 19 worldwide wins together, there's another split. Man, splits on golf keep happening. Sergio Garcia and TaylorMade have parted company. I'm so sorry. They parted company. This is a sad thing. Anyway, the Spaniard has been released from the remaining years of his TaylorMade contract. The news comes after Adidas sold TaylorMade in May by U.S. private equity group KPS Partners. Garcia has been the poster boy for Adidas for golf. Adidas golf for many years, wearing the company's apparel, shoes, hat, and using an Adidas tour bag. TaylorMade released a statement today referencing a memorable 15-year partnership. After agreeing the release from the remaining of the years of Garcia's TaylorMade contract. That statement from TaylorMade wrote, after a memorable 15-year partnership with Sergio Garcia, we have mutually agreed on a release from the remaining years of his TaylorMade contract. It has been an honor to play a role in his performance throughout his career, including the Players' Championship, 19 worldwide wins, Ryder Cup heroics, and his 2017 Masters win. We congratulate Sergio on a career year and wished him all the best for the future. You know, Garcia signed with TaylorMade Adidas from Titleist after the 2002 Ryder Cup in October. During his time with TaylorMade, Garcia won 19 times internationally, including his first major at this year's Masters, in what was a thrilling final day battle there with fellow TaylorMade staffer Justin Rose. He also won the 2008 Players Championship at TPC Sawgrass. And now you would be asking yourself, well, where next for Sergio? Well, he was spotted using a Callaway Mac Daddy wedge at the recent British Masters and has also been using a Toulon putter. Toulon is a putter brand crafted by Odyssey, who are owned by Callaway. Will he sign with Callaway or someone else? Who knows? I don't know. But all will be revealed in due course. As things stand, Garcia is still an Adidas ambassador and will continue wearing Adidas apparel and carrying an Adidas tour bag. It's been a big 2017 year for TaylorMade, having signed both Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy and being sold from Adidas. As well as Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods, the company still have contracts with a large contingent of the world's biggest names, including world number one Dustin Johnson, former world number one Jason Day, world number five John Rahm, and 2013 U.S. Open champion and Olympic gold medalist Justin Rose. In a way, you can make the case that the move also makes sense in that TaylorMade has a large investment in endorsement deals with tour players, and with the sale of the company to KPS Capital Partners in May, maybe the new owners might have wanted to shed some of that payroll, and that's why they granted that release. But also, there's this saying that with Rory now there, they're filling the role that Garcia would leave as the company's international icon. Fred, all that could be true. At the moment, it's mere speculation, but anyway, you look at it, to me, it's a win-win situation on both sides. I mean, TaylorMade really has a big stack like never before of stars that they can just start to push back, push up there and promote. And Garcia, well, he was just would have been just one more of those big stars and maybe a good new star with Callaway or whoever it is going to be the one that he signs with. It's going to be a good start for him.
Yeah, people were telling me when Adidas was trying to sell TaylorMade that one of the stumbling blocks was so many high-priced contracts, sponsorship contracts with endorsement contracts with so many pros. It's just a big burden. And, you know, they've got Tiger and they've got Rory and, you know, they got all these guys. How can you afford to pay everybody? So I don't know. Sergio evidently had a better offer someplace. Somebody's saying, hey, we're going to take care of you. Or he wouldn't have opted out of a good paying deal for sure. So, but this is the time of year, Carlos. Now November, December, January, when guys start jumping around and from company to company and get new deals and stuff. So, this was just kind of the first one out of the box. Hey, next story up, new blood testing regulations came into effect this week at the Safeway Open. Little was said or written about the new drug testing policy that began on the PGA Tour last week at the Safeway Open, but it has ushered in a new era in drug awareness for the world's best golfers. The Tour has always maintained that it was a clean sport, but did adopt a drug policy in 2008. Tour Commissioner Tim Pinchem wanted to illustrate to the world that golf was void of performance-enhancing drugs that had plagued other professional sports and the Olympics. Testing under the old policy was kind of hit or miss, and a few violations to the program were found among the players, although a couple of those could be argued were ill-founded due to prescription meds or drugs used in such low dosage that they would never have affected performance under any circumstance. Everything is changing, though, beginning last week. The Tour announced in June it would begin blood testing for the 2017-2018 season. Paul Casey, a member of the Player Advisory Committee, said, The main reason for blood tests is a urine sample doesn't cover a couple of the drugs. Part of the tour's shift to blood testing also included a move to the expanded list of prohibited substances, which now includes the entire banned list from the World Anti-Doping Agency, WADA, but it will be the new blood testing element that will receive the most attention. We were told how it would be done, that it would all be fine. Let's say if you get four urine drug tests a year, which is average on tour, one of them would probably be a blood test. Although the tour doesn't disclose the exact timing of anti-doping tests, under the policy, they have the authority to test players at any time, before or after a round, and even when a player is not at a tournament. The out-of-competition testing, though, has been virtually non-existent. They just haven't really done that for anybody. The tour recently released a 20-minute video to teach players about the anti-doping program and specifically blood testing. According to the video, blood testing takes about 20 minutes, includes two vials filled with less than a tablespoon of blood. The samples are then submitted to a WADA-approved lab, kept for at least 2 years after the test. While the tour was aware of concerns over a lack of blood testing for years, the 2016 Olympic Games convinced officials and players to move forward with this new policy. In Rio, about 15 to 20% of the tests given to golfers were blood tests, and that there were no negative issues with players being impacted by the blood testing procedures. The tour has spent the last few months educating players on the procedures, but much like what happened in 2008 when testing was started, there will probably be a few growing pains. Whatever concerns over testing players may have had, the vast majority agree it was time for the tour to take this long-awaited step toward a more complete program. And some suggest there may be even more room for the expansion of testing. Golf's return to the Olympics will ensure the game remains vigilant when it comes to testing, and officials haven't ruled out new tests as science and doping evolves. But for now, the PGA Tour is content with the new testing methods, Carlos. It all started last week at Safeway Open.
Ah, finally.
Do we have to start testing? Are we going to start blood testing, you know, at background report? Are we going to start doing that, or are we good?
Yeah, we have to comply. I mean,
we got to comply?
That's the rule. We got to comply. I mean,
okay.
I don't know what they're going to find, other than maybe a little fat.
Yeah, a lot of fat.
Yeah, not a little, a lot. They'll fine us for having excess. Yeah, coffee, me too.
My morning coffee.
Yeah, if there's no morning that I can start even driving without my coffee, so no. I don't wake up until I get a cup of coffee. Hey, another split. More. I tell you, this is an epidemic. Danny Willett has become the latest high-profile player to leave Andrew Chubby Chandler's management stable following the shocking departure of Lee Westwood over the summer. The former Masters champion is believed to have become unsettled by all the rumors swirling regarding the reasons behind Westwood leaving to join IMG. Westwood had been with Chandler since turning pro in 1997, and Willett has now changed his caddy, his coach, and manager during this disastrous year on the course, and that's an understatement. But there has been encouraging signs recently that he's beginning to rediscover his game. He emerged victorious, as you might remember, last year in Augusta, capitalizing on Jordan Spieth's final round collapse to claim the green jacket. And the 30-year-old has not won a tournament since clinching his major title. So maybe this will be the last straw that will bring him back to what he really was. He was a rising star, not only on the European Tour, but after that Masters win, a lot of was expected from him. But it's really, really, it was really tough to see that now. Chubby Chandler, like you mentioned once, Fred, once the person that decided the fate of a lot of the European Tour players, now it's just being abandoned left and right. So something's going on there, and well, soon I guess everything will be known. Now, the other piece of news that I have from the European Tour, this one is finally somebody is taking a stand on it and acting it. I couldn't wait for this to finally be employed, and everybody knows me, knows and have heard me here. Whenever I mention this, this is something that should have been done years ago. The shot clock is coming not to the NBA. It's there already. It's now coming to a regular European Tour event next year, with penalty shots handed out to dawdlers, and in the most radical move yet to tackle that horrendous blight of slow play. Hate that slow play. The welcome initiative will be trialed at the Austrian Open, with one official estimating it will speed up rounds by 45 minutes. If that happens, it's hard to believe it wouldn't be introduced subsequently at every tournament in the world. The shot clock is coming to a regular European Tour. I mean, I tell you, at last, someone has gotten serious about slow play. The idea was floated at a players' meeting last Tuesday night, and it received unanimous support. It was something that it was backed by Lee Westwood as saying, "What a brilliant idea and long overdue." Yes, Lee, yes, brilliant, long overdue. At least someone is getting serious about this. Golf leading bodies have tiptoed pitifully around the subject for years without ever doing anything meaningful. Thank you, Keith Pelley. Westwood's Ryder Cup teammate Andy Sullivan has been another huge advocate at St. Albans, and he says it underlines how long 40 seconds is to play a shot and how ridiculous is that that rounds take so long. The sooner it's introduced in tour, the better. Oh, amen. Amen, Andy. Now Sully has got his wish. I got it too, although it was ironic that the idea was raised at the Alfred Dunhill Links at St. Andrews, where rounds in the Pro-Am format frequently last glacial 6 hours. Man, I finally, Fred, will see something that I am sure this will be employed everywhere pretty soon. And that's one of the things that I really hate about a player going and let me see the shot. Hold on, let me back out. Let me see it again. No, I think the ball was going left. Was it right? Was it left? No, it's going to be up, down. Man, just take that shot. It doesn't matter. If everybody has the same clock, nobody has advantage.
Yeah, but, you know, I got a question here, Carlos. What happens about rulings? What happens when you have to take a drop? Does the clock start when you drop the ball? Does the clock not start until the referee has made a ruling? You know, when you call somebody over, you know, the official's 2 holes away. He's got to drive over. He's got to get off. You got to talk to him. I mean, they take 4 or 5 minutes. You know, Jordan Spieth's ruling took 20 minutes at the Open Championship last year when he ended up dropping to the driving range. How do they handle these things? That, you know, so you got to ask the guy. You got a clock. You got a guy in your group. You got to ask him. Okay, start the clock now. What? How do you do that?
You just said it. Once the ball is set, that's when the clock starts. Once you get to the ball, that's when it starts. If you have a ruling to go, then that's something that stops play. But once that ruling is done, 40 seconds to shot. That's it. That's how it is. You have 40 seconds
once
the ball is set. That's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. It really is. So 40 seconds times 70 shots, you know, what's that, 280?
That's just
that's,
a little
you know, almost
hours.
A minute. Yeah. That, I mean, it's 3.5-hour rounds are very doable. I played a couple courses this year where they wanted you to finish in 340 and you were walking, okay? And so you can't let any grass grow. You got to hit and keep moving if you're walking to get around in 340, 345, in a foursome now, okay? If you're able to double bogey, pick it up, move on, we're leaving, you know. We're not wasting time putting everything out either. So, I don't know. I'm curious. I'm not one who has been a big – I've had a lot of problems with slow play. I, who does it bother? It bothers, I guess, the people watching on TV. It bothers the writers when they have to wait for them to get finished up to put turn in their articles for the week. You know, at night they're hanging around, they're writing their stuff, but it makes the guys mad, the announcers mad. They want to get to their airplanes and get out of town. I don't know. Okay, we'll try it. I'm game. Let's see it. Let's see how it goes. I'm curious. I am curious. Last story tonight in the Par 5 News is about the USGA is going to add some exemptions to the men's and women's qualifying for the U.S. Men's Open and the U.S. Women's Open. If you're a scratch woman or male golfer and are trying to get into the U.S. Open, USGA announced last week that the men's Open and the women's will increase the number of exemption categories from qualifying effective for the 2018 championships. U.S. Junior Amateur and the U.S. Mid-Amateur from the previous year will be exempt from local and sectional qualifying. The U.S. Girls Junior and the U.S. Women's Middle Amateur Champs from the previous year will also exempt from the U.S. Women's Open qualifying. The first recipients of the new USGA categories are, the first two is Erica Shepherd of Greenwood, Indiana, who won the 2017 U.S. Girls Junior, and Noah Goodwin of Texas, who won the U.S. Junior Amateur Championship. Both earned their victories in July. And then in October, the U.S. Mid-Am will be held, and in November, the U.S. Women's Mid-Am. So those two champions will be added to the fields for next year also. The U.S. Mid-Am is occurring right now, actually, in right outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And as we announced last week, the U.S. Women's Mid-Am that was supposed to be held in down in Florida, down by Naples, had to be moved to Champions Golf Club in Houston, Texas. Stuart Francis, USGA Championship Committee Chairman, said, adding these exemptions to both open championships affirms our commitment while supporting and celebrating amateur golf. The openness of both the U.S. Open and the U.S. Women's Open is very important to the USGA, and we feel these exemptions are befitting of national champions. The U.S. Open is going to be played at Shinnecock Hills out on Long Island in Southampton from June 14th to 17th next summer. It will now include 17 exemption categories. On the U.S. Women's Open, which will be held May 31st to June 3rd at Shoal Creek in Alabama, we'll have 19 exemption categories, Carlos. So that wraps up the Par 5 News for October 10th, 2017.
And with that, we're going to move now to the practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic and each of us take our own shots at it. This week, our topic is going to be a look at the race to Dubai. There's still a couple of tournaments before the actual series finale goes, which is the playoffs there, which is three tournaments. But they are right now going to play, like we mentioned in our four call, the Italian Open. Next week is going to be the Andalucía Valderrama Masters, hosted by Sergio Garcia Foundation. And they're going to be playing also the WGC HSBC Champions, but that is a WGC tournament that is going to be part of the PGA Tour as well, so it doesn't count for the play to be part of the Race to Dubai, which a little bit of history on it. The European Tour's money list was known always as the Order of Merit until 2009, when it was replaced by the Race to Dubai with a bonus pool of $7.5 million, which originally was $10 million, distributed among the top 15 players at the end of the season, with the winner taking $1.5 million, which originally was $2 million. The new name reflected the addition of a new season-ending tournament, which is the Dubai World Championship, held at the end of November in Dubai. The tournament also had a $7.5 million prize fund, originally $10 million, and was contested by the leading 60 players in the race following the season's penultimate event, the Hong Kong Open. The winner of the Race to Dubai also receives a 10-year European Tour exemption, while the winner of the Dubai World Championship tournament receives a 5-year European Tour exemption. The reduction in prize money announced back in September 2009 was due to the global economic downturn. I mean, in 2012, the bonus pool was reduced to $3.75 million, with the winner getting $1 million and only the top 10 golfers getting a bonus. The bonus pool was increased to $5 million back in 2014, with the top 15 players earning part of the pool. Henrik Stenson won the race to Dubai for a second time in 2016 after a brilliant final round at the Jumeirah Gulf Estates confirmed his status as European number one following a season in which he became Sweden's first major champion at the Open Championship. Stenson's name was etched onto the Harry Vardon Trophy once more, next to that of Rory McIlroy in 2015, 14, and 12, himself back in 13, Luke Donald 2011, Martin Keimer 2010, and Lee Westwood, who was the first winner in 2009. Stenson held off a strong challenge last year from Danny Willett, who finished second after also capturing his maiden major at the Masters. And before that, I mean, it was, like I said, the order of merit, and it was filled with a lot of the top players that you can think of from the from Europe, like Seve, Nick Faldo, Sandy Lyle. Colin Montgomery won it for 7 years in a row. Ernie Els won it also twice. Justin Rose had been a winner. Patty Harrington. But the race to Dubai since 2009, Rory McIlroy and Henrik Stenson have won it the last five times. This year, there's going to be some individual tournaments. This is more like to mirror also the FedEx Cup. So, Fred, they're going to be, last year it was reduced to three events, the Turkish Airlines Open, the Nedbank Golf Challenge, and the DP World Tour Championship. I mean, is that something that's going to stay? Why was that? It's only three instead of four, like in the FedEx Cup.
Well, as you mentioned, the WGC HSBC Championships in China historically was the first event of the four-event Race to Dubai playoff series. And they dropped that, which it's a big enough event on its own. You know, they didn't need it. And also the other factor I think that's played into this is the Rolex series. So, you know, Keith Pelle, he's kind of spread his eggs around a little bit. And the Rolex series with the seven events, it's taken a little bit of shine off away from the Race to Dubai, which, you know, three events is certainly enough to crown a playoff winner. And the PGA Tour may want to take a lesson from Pelle on this one, actually. Wouldn't hurt to drop one of theirs off. You know, I don't know if they need four. The Rolex series was a stroke of genius by the European Tour CEO and has yielded better fields and thus more media attention for those events throughout the season and not just focused on the Race to Dubai after the PGA Tour season is over. They're in the wraparound season, which nobody's paying attention to because of football. And so the European Tour gets a little bit more more focus, more attention because they're getting some bigger tournaments. As you mentioned, now it encompasses three events. The WGC HSBC, which used to be the first, is no longer on that list. They're going to start with the Turkish Open, head to South Africa for the Nedbank, which used to be an event on the South African Tour in January, and conclude with the DP World Tour Championship at the Jumeirah Earth Course in Dubai. Since it began in 2009, you know, kind of like the European Tour itself, they've had money problems. The total purse has had to be decreased a couple times, and the bonus pool has been cut down to only paying out to the top 10 at the end of the DP World Tour Championship at the conclusion of the playoffs. And this year, the bonus pool is the top 10 players at the end of the season will split $5 million. The winner, which, as we saw in the FedEx Cup, you could have a different winner for the Race to Dubai series and a different winner for the DP World Tour Championship. But as far as the bonus pool goes, the winner of the Race to Dubai gets $1.25 million. It goes all the way down to number 10, gets the last money, down to $250,000. So it decreases by $1 million bucks there. It goes down about $200,000 as you go down in spots each one. But you know, Carlos, I really think Keith Pelley and the European Tour have a pretty good handle on their Race to Dubai playoffs. You know, three is more than enough, and by spreading some of the money over the seven Rolex Series events, the Europeans are getting a much bigger bang for their buck. Paying the top 10 is good. It gives more of a sense of urgency for the players to get into that elite group throughout the entire year, not just collecting the extra bucks for finishing inside the top 50 like the PGA Tour does. So I kind of like this a little bit. It puts a little more sense of urgency into the players to get up in there. Even the big names, you know, there's some big names just outside looking in right now. So, you know, I may talk about that here in a minute. But, yeah, I kind of like what they're doing, Carlos. I liked it since they started it. It was kind of a copycat thing with the FedEx Tour, but they've kind of molded it and made it their own now with what they're doing.
Yeah, they made it their own, like you say, and I totally agree. I like this because everybody, if you see now, there's the Italian Open, which used to be, even though it's Italy's national championship, it wasn't that big of a tournament until this has become part of it. Now you see seven of the top 10 playing it, trying to get into that a better position, and two of them that are not playing, it's just one that is injured, Rory McIlroy, and there's also Bernd Wiesberger, who is out right now. But if you see, everybody's trying to place into position, and throughout the years, the leaderboard has been changing somewhat. I mean, we've seen big time winners, like we said, like, the last 5 years has been either Rory McIlroy or Henrik Stenson, but below that, you will see that Danny Willett, the past 2 years, have been finished second. Before Danny Willett in 2014, it was then Henrik, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy. So that the top names has always been there. But this year, there's a different feel to it. Rory McIlroy, as we know, he has been battling injuries. He's seventh, and his chances of winning would have been very difficult for him. So he's out. But you're going to talk about that in a little while. Tommy Fleetwood is the leader right now with a very chunk of change. He's just over 1 million points above Sergio Garcia. John Rahm is number three. Rafa Cabrera Bello is number four. Alex Noren is number five. So he's another late bloomer that is coming in. Look at number six is Ross Fisher, another veteran getting in there. Francesco Molinari is number eight. Justin Rose is another one of the big names. He's number nine. Bernd Wiesberger is number 10. But besides that, then you see a Tyrrell Hatton, Thomas Peters, Paul Dunn, Matthew Fitzpatrick, Lee Hao Tong. The first American is number 16. That's Peter Uihlein, who's been playing there for a few years now. Alexander Levy, number 17. Henrik Stenson is down to 18. Then you see Hideto Tanihara from Japan at number 19. He's one of the affiliate members because he's a member of the Japan Tour. Jordan Smith is the highest right now ranked graduate from the Challenge Tour. Lee Westwood is down there to 25. Ryan Fox is another one that is coming from the Challenge Tour. Matthew Southgate, 27. So you see a lot of changing of the guard, maybe from the big time players now to a lot of the other up and coming players also getting this new look, and they're all playing there well in the European Tour Race to Dubai. So it's changing a little bit. Yes, we know that there's a lot of the big-time players that are playing in the States, but you used to see a lot of them, like Henrik Stenson still here, Justin Rose, there's Lee Westwood, but they're just in a lower seed right now than they used to be before.
Yeah, you know, you were going down through the list there. I was looking at it earlier today, and a couple names jumped out at me. Number 13, Paul Dunn, 14, Matthew Fitzpatrick, and then 16, Peter Uihlein. Those guys are in position. If they have, you know, there's these three tournaments left, and then they got the playoffs. If they have, you know, three or four good weeks here these last 5 or 6 weeks, they could end up with this thing. They could be right up in there. And then, You mentioned it has a different feel, and that's exactly a good statement. It has a different feel because you've got Tommy Fleetwood in there, and you got John Rahm. You got some different names. You don't have those same guys. You got Lee Westwood's way down there. Charles Schwartz or Louis Oosthuizen isn't even in sight. So, you know, the guys that have been dominating the European Tour over the last few years are just not there this year. And there's some new blood in there, much like we're seeing on the PGA Tour with the Justin Thomas and Daniel Berger and some of these young guys coming on, Xander Schauffele and Brooks Koepka and all these young guys coming on and doing real well. So, you know, with Rory McIlroy on the sidelines for the rest of the year, it opens the door for a few other players to move up. So, you know, you mentioned Tommy Fleetwood. He really announced his presence in Europe this year, currently leads the Race to Dubai standings. Sergio Garcia, you know, can Sergio put it together here over the end of the season and, you know, maybe get a Masters and then, you know, win the Race to Dubai all 1 year? That would be gigantic for him. Who has the edge heading into the Race to Dubai playoffs? I don't know. You know, I would like to say Sergio because he's the big name up there. But I'm telling you, since he's gotten married, he just hasn't. He doesn't seem like his head's quite in the game right now. But, you know, the guy I like, Carlos, the guy I like a lot, and I know you're going to agree with me, John Rahm. This guy likes to win on the big stage. He has shown the ability to get his game up for big events. And then, you know, in a three-tournament event, 216 holes of golf, is what the Race to Dubai is, 372-hole events, so 216 holes. It's definitely going to identify the best golfer for those 3 weeks. And right now, John Rahm is the best golfer in the top 10 of the Race to Dubai standings. I know you may argue, you may say Tommy Fleetwood. Well, I think John Rahm is the best golfer in the top 10 on the European Tour right now. And I know you like Tommy Fleetwood, but he just doesn't appear ready to me to handle this kind of a situation, this big of a deal. So I don't think he's quite ready for the really big spotlight yet. But going to be a great player, no question about it. But I tell you what, I think the edge goes right now to John Rahm, Carlos. What about you?
Yeah, that was going to be my pick to win.
So, yeah.
I think John is positioned prime there to take this. Tommy just returned after over a month because of the birth of his son. I mean, he shot that 63 lights out at Kingsbourne to get the course record. But I think John is really out on a tear this year. And for Sergio, the thing I know that he's been playing a little bit out after he got married. But the thing that I see with him is also that historically, he hasn't paid much attention to the Race to Dubai. He always misses like one or two of them, and he doesn't just cares that much about that. And we can even see it also in the FedEx Cup. It's like he doesn't care about that much about this end of the year stuff. But no, definitely, I think John Rahm, it'll be between John and Tommy. John, definitely, I think he has the edge. I think that there in Dubai, I think that course fits him well, and he should be able to win this. But still, we have three tournaments before that starts, but we hope that we have given you a good view at what's going to be happening there in the Race to the Rye for certain once the final three tournaments are going to start. We're going to give you a little more preview now with everybody settled and where it's going to be there. I also forgot to mention that Patrick Reed is number 21. So you might remember he accepted European Tour membership this year, so he's also part of this Race to Dubai, and that's another player that, you know, can have three good weeks and be a factor at the end of the day. Any final words before we go to our VIG?
No, just the fact that we kind of did this early. I just don't feel like we talked about the European Tour that much this year. There's been so much action in the U.S. and on the LPGA. We spent a lot of time talking about them. And so I just kind of wanted to get the European Tour some time in here. And it doesn't hurt to go down through it. I know we'll talk about more as we get into it. But I thought this was just kind of a good preview heading down the last few weeks of the European Tour's schedule.
And now, let's go to our VIG, very important guest of the week. And I know, Fred, you've been wanting to get this interview out. You said that this has been one of the best, if not the best interview that you've been part of. And this is with Renee Powell. As you know, she's an American professional golfer who played in the LPGA Tour and is currently the head professional at her family's Clearview Golf Club in East Canton, Ohio. She was just the second African-American woman to ever play on the LPGA Tour. Althea Gibson was the first African-American LPGA Tour member. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this great interview that you have in store for us.
Carlos, I've known about Renee Powell and the story of her father and building the golf course over in East Canton for several years, and have always had in my mind that I would get over there someday and I would meet them and talk to her and view the course. And it's just never worked out. And finally, a couple weeks ago, I had the chance to be over there, and I contacted her. She was going to be there, and so we set up a time to meet. And so I got the chance to go talk to her one-on-one. And she is just an absolute delight to talk to. She's funny. She's witty. She doesn't take herself too seriously. And this is someone, Carlos, who's truly American golf royalty. She, you know, was one of the first, when the RNA decided to admit women members, she was one of the first seven women that were invited to become members, along with Annika Sorensen, Laura Davies, Princess Anne. And a couple other ladies like Louise Suggs. She's came through the time, Carlos, back in the 60s and the early 70s was when it wasn't easy for a young woman of color to travel around the country and play professional golf. Hotels didn't want you to stay there. Restaurants didn't want to serve you. She has led an incredible life. She's been a trailblazer, and yet she is one of the biggest ambassadors for golf in the world. So, go ahead and play the interview, Carlos. Like I say, she's just a delight to talk to.
Before I go to the interview, where did she study? Any known university?
Well, yeah, she started at Ohio University. She played golf there, but she ended up at Ohio State University. So, yeah. I don't really get into it. I didn't get into that in the interview, but there's an article in Ohio Golf Journal that kind of goes along with the interview, actually, that goes into more detail. Carlos, I know you don't like it when I go very long on the interview. I could have done a 30-minute interview with her, okay? So I left a lot of stuff out. And you'll have to, if you want more information, you'll have to read it in Ohio Golf Journal. But, yeah, you're right. She did play golf at Ohio State University.
All right, let's play it.
We were happy and honored to be talking today with Renee Powell, who is one of the trailblazers in the world of golf. She was the first African-American young lady to play in the USGA Girls Junior Am. She was one of the first African-American women, not the first, but one of the first to play on the LPGA Tour. Her father built the golf course that she still is involved in and teaches in, is a member also of the RNA. So, Renee, thank you for talking with us, and welcome to the Back Nine Report.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Renee, we were talking a little bit today. You were just inducted or going to be inducted into the PGA Hall of Fame. And you made a statement that the NFL Football Hall of Fame has 300 members, and there's only 170 in the PGA Hall of Fame. And also, your father was inducted in 2013, so to be with him is a special thing.
It really is. There's actually 310 members in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And as you said, 170 will be in the PGA of America Hall of Fame. So, yeah, my dad and I actually will be the first and only father-daughter members of the PGA Hall of Fame. So that's a pretty awesome thing.
Let's go back. When you started playing junior golf, you were telling me that it was difficult. There wasn't a lot of opportunity to play, and it was difficult to get into some events when you're playing junior golf.
Well, you know, into junior golf because of the fact that I'm black, and a lot of tournaments were not geared to everyone. They were not inclusive. certainly junior tournaments and amateur tournaments. My parents actually started when I was 16, I think. They hosted a junior tournament here in at Clearview when it was just a nine-hole golf course. It became the largest junior tournament in the state of Ohio. I was glad when I aged out because I felt so much pressure to always have to win the tournament. So it was a boys division and girls division. They actually started that because of the fact that there were so few tournaments for female golfers.
You also said then that you did move up. You played on the LPGA Tour for, I think, 13 years. It was difficult even traveling, playing the LPGA Tour, even into the 60s and 70s.
Well, it was. The travel had to do with facts of there was still a lot of, there was a lot of issues and a lot of problems in our country when it came to racism and prejudice, and ended up, there were times when, we were going to restaurants, and my roommate for many years was Sandra Post, who was a Canadian player. A few years ago, Sandra said to me, Renz, I often wondered why we would go in the restaurants, they would serve everybody else but us, and I said to her, well, Sandra, I didn't want to tell you it was because you were Canadian. I didn't want you to feel bad. So it was just a lot of things traveling, hotels, just different issues. Going to the golf clubs where they would stop me from going into the locker room, even though I had the same credentials, but the credentials I had were not as big as my face. And so you would have to have some of my peers would have to come in and say, no, she's a member too. I mean, Donna Capone had to say something one time, another time in a hotel. Somebody had said something to Kathy Whitworth, we're out in Caldwell, Idaho, and she walked in and she told them at the front desk, we either all stay or we all walk. So I had no problems with my players on the tour, my peers. It was just all the other outside agencies.
A couple of years ago, in modern times, you were asked to be one of the first women members of the RNA. Now, how does that feel? And that kind of came out of the blue for you a little bit.
Well, it did. I knew that there was a vote that the Royal Nation Golf Club of St. Andrews, Scotland, they were going to vote into whether or not they should allow women to become members. It was, 267 years they were an all-male club. And they voted to allow that, and they decided to select seven women from around the world to become their first female members. And so myself and Louise Suggs, who was one of the founders of the LPGA, were actually the two Americans. There was
Lord Davies
and Annika Thorstein and the Princess Royal. I had to look up to see who the Princess Royal was, and I realized that it was Princess Anne, because her mother is the patron of the RNA as the Queen of England. That was a pretty awesome thing, too, because I didn't even know they even knew me.
And you said you were invited to a luncheon, and it was a pretty select group there.
As the new captain came in, it was during the during the Open that was held at St. Andrews in 2015, and so I had received an invitation to a luncheon that the captain was hosting, captain of the golf club. So we walk into this room, and they hand you a glass of champagne, and I look in the room, and there's like four tables in the room, four large tables, and at the table next to us is Prince Andrew, who is also a member of the RNA. And so I was able to take a guest with me, and so I had asked Franco Harris and his wife, Dana, were going over, also because of the whole thing and the whole history part of me becoming a member. And so I asked Franco to escort me to the luncheon, and he did. The funny thing about it, too, though, is that we're out watching the RNA, watching the Open, and you will never believe the fact. I was so surprised that there are all these people, they say, oh, is that Franco Harris? People have a terrible towel at the Open. Oh, my God. So I guess American football is also well-known, and certainly the Steelers are known around the world.
Renee, it has truly been a pleasure and an honor speaking with you today. Congratulations on your induction into the PGA Hall of Fame. We applaud your work here teaching juniors and everyone here at your Clearview Golf Club here in East Canton, and we wish you a lot of success going forward.
Well, thank you so much, Fred. Enjoyed talking to you.
There you have it. That was Renee Powell, who was the second African-American woman ever to play the LPGA Tour. And I believe, Fred, she's also a member of the Ohio Golf Hall of Fame, right now? Renee?
Yeah, that's correct. I think she's a member of like four different Hall of Fames. The Ohio Golf Hall of Fame, sure. She has an honorary doctorate at the University of St. Andrews. She lived in England for 7 years. She was a golf club pro for a time in England. And she really is known for her work with juniors. And she's had the opportunity. She met a professor at the University of St. Andrews, and he helped organize international travel trips for juniors. And so there was a junior group from Ernie Els from South Africa. There was a group from Texas with Bill Dickey. And then Renee put a group together. And so those three groups of juniors, I think there were seven, each one had seven kids on it, went over and played golf at St. Andrews and at Carnoustie and King's Barnes and, you know, the great courses there in St. Andrews and spent a week over there. So she started a program to introduce golf into African countries, into schools in Africa. She's just amazing person and is down to earth, Carlos, as you would ever want to meet someone. Like I say, it was just a real pleasure to get to talk with her, and I know we'll have her back on the show again sometime because I asked her if she would, and she said she would, so we will definitely take advantage of it. But like I say, we have a little more detailed story article in the Ohio Golf Journal, which will be out later tomorrow. And we'll be writing more on it as we go along, Carlos.
So there you have it. That was Renee Powell. And if you want more information, more detailed information about this interview, just see the Ohio Golf Journal. Let's go now for our final putts. I'm going to start as usual. And let me tell you about a fun short course that runs along an appeal to open this past week at Pinehurst Resort. Designed by golf architect Gil Hans, the Cradle is located mere steps from the resort clubhouse and offers nine holes ranging from 56 to 127 yards. Far less intimidating than the regulation courses that the resort is known for. The Cradle is expected to appeal to golfers on every level. I anticipate it will be popular with buddy groups to come to town for a very golf-intensive trip, but the resort also wanted to make sure the course appealed to families with children, and it delivers on this as well. In addition, the short course will also beckon beginners and those with little experience on the links. This should be another hit for Gil Hans. I mean, he understands the soil and the Pinehurst look, and he was able to deliver that field to the Cradle short course. So can't wait to see it sometime. Hopefully I can go sometime and play. It sounds like a very fun short course. And on my final plot, I have to say that Valero Energy has signed a 10-year extension as the title sponsor for the PGA Tour Texas Open. The deal was announced last Wednesday and runs through 2028. The next year's tournament is set for April 19 to the 22, 2 weeks after the Masters at TPC San Antonio's Oak Course. But now, in 2019, the first year of the extension, the event will be played the week before the Masters. Fred, the event was played first in 1922, making it the third oldest regular tour event. Valero took it over as sponsor in 2002, and that will be in place for at least 11 more years. And it's part of what it will be one of many changes on the PGA Tour schedule. And this one, a big change, because it's going to be now played before the year's first major.
John Daly was back entertaining last week at the Safeway Open. He jumped up on the stage with the musician Gavin DeGraw, did a tribute to deceased rocker Tom Petty with "I Won't Back Down." That song certainly describes Big John, whether on the golf course, in the chow line, or at the gambling tables. He's all in all the time. Former world number one amateur Matt McNeely made his professional debut this week in Napa at the Safeway Open. McNeely was constantly asked about turning professional while in school at Stanford. He always pushed the issue off. Now, since he's graduated and at the end of his amateur days, he's become a touring professional and made his first cut at the Safeway Open last week, finishing T52. We want to congratulate Daryl Kessner, a PGA professional from Long Island, New York. He was chosen PGA Professional of the Year. Kessler said of his award, "It's an easy job. All you have to do is play like Jack Nicklaus, teach like David Ledbetter, dress and run a pro shop like Ralph Lauren, plus tell a story like Bob Hope." That has to be one of the great quotes on the job description for a club pro of all time. What he forgot to mention, a club pro also has to put up with complaints and suggestions from members telling him how to do his job. And just like a doctor, the members constantly pester him with questions about a glitch in his golf swing when he's just trying to relax away from the course. And, of course, the members always know better than the professional about everything connected with their club or golf. Also want to mention the Range Bucket List by Jim Dodson is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble bookstores. New York Times bestselling author Jim Dodson presented a collection of some of his best interviews and people he has met through his 30 years of writing about golf. Pick that up if you're looking for a great read. And I want to close tonight, Carlos. We want to take a moment to mention Houston, Florida, and Puerto Rico. We are now a couple weeks removed from the terrible hurricanes that hit those areas, but the residents of Southeast Texas, Florida, and especially Puerto Rico need any help you can give. We urge our listeners to help in any way they may be able. The need is great. I know in this area there are continuing food, canned drives, canned goods drives, water, and all kinds of things to amass necessary products to send to the beleaguered areas in the communities all over the country. If nothing else, click on the Red Cross website, send a couple of dollars so they can continue their life-saving work they do every day. That wraps up the show tonight, Carlos.
That do, and I thank you for that and mentioning, you know, as everybody knows, if not, I was born in Puerto Rico and lived there until 2 years ago, and I still have family, and I can tell you firsthand because I haven't been there since the hurricane, but because of all of the many family that I still have there, my mom, my brother, I can tell you the need is really, really, really dire. There's a dire need there. So any help there also, you know, like you said, for Harvey's in Florida and in Houston, all those areas that have been struck by the hurricanes, it's really tough for me to say it because I know how much they're suffering and I wish I could do more, but hey, I second your thoughts and help the Red Cross. They're doing a great job as well. With that, Back Niners, we'll wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Renee Powell. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, remember, if you want to see on TV, Roku TV, that's where you'll see it. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
With over 400 stores nationwide, Burke's Outlet is growing faster than ever. Now shop our newest store in Midlothian at the grand opening celebration October 12th through 15th. Discover more brand name fashion for the whole family, plus home decor up to 70% off department store prices. The first 150 customers each day October 12th through 15th get a mystery scratch-off card for a shopping spree up to $250 at the new Burke's Outlet in the Midlothian Town Crossing. Doors open at 9 a.m., 10 a.m. Sundays. With over 400 stores nationwide, Burke's Outlet is growing faster than ever. Now shop our newest store in Midlothian at the grand opening celebration October 12th through 15th. Discover more brand name fashion for the whole family, plus home decor up to 70% off department store prices. The first 150 customers each day October 12th through 15th get a mystery scratch-off card for a shopping spree up to $250 at the new Burke's Outlet in the Midlothian Town Crossing. Doors open at 9 a.m., 10 a.m. Sundays.